You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
Monster House presents.
At Monster Talk, we're always looking into mysteries, but there's one mystery which only you can provide the answer for. Who are you? Airwave Media is doing a network-wide audience survey, and we would love to learn more about you, our listeners, the people who make this show possible with your support and attention. Just go to surveymonkey.com/r/airwave, all one word. So that's surveymonkey.com/r/airwave. But don't worry, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. Select Monster Talk from the drop-down list of shows and then fill out the simple questions to tell us more about who you are. We hope to hear from you. That's surveymonkey.com/r/airwave. Thanks. Monster Talk's a proud member of the Airwave Media Podcast Network, home of such shows as Kick-Ass News, Movie Therapy, and Therapist Uncensored. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com.
Content warning. This episode contains discussion of murder, death, slavery, and sex crimes. Listener discretion is advised.
This is Our Evidence, Our Ghost Adventures.
The Myrtles Plantation in St. Francisville, Louisiana, makes everyone's top 10 list for renowned haunted places. We constantly hear from fans that they want us to check out this 215-year-old home. One of the challenges of investigating such a famous haunt is that the stories have been told and retold so many times that we really don't know what's real and what isn't.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
Welcome to part one of our two-part coverage of the Myrtles. As you heard in that little clip up front from the TV show Ghost Adventures, this plantation turned bed and breakfast has a huge reputation in the paranormal world as being a hotbed of ghostly activity. We'll start to unpack the legends around the site in part one. Famous ghosts almost always manifest most reliably, not in the form of an apparition, but in the form of a ghost story. Let's dive right in as my co-host Karen and her husband Matt take us down south to the Spanish moss-laden Live Oaks of Louisiana, not too far from Baton Rouge, where you can find the plantation called the Myrtles. It used to be a plantation, but now it's an allegedly haunted bed and breakfast. Or should we say, dread and breakfast?
Monster Talk.
Hey, Welcome back to another Monster Talk. I'm excited because I'm finally going to get to listen with you, the listeners, for the first time to hear some of Karen's new investigation findings into a place that she's been several times and written about, and it's called the Myrtles Plantation. And tonight we have a special guest, Matt Baxter, who's joining us once again. So welcome back, Matt and Karen. Myrtle me up.
Thank you.
Hit me with your bad myrtles.
Thank you. So Matt is joining us because he has investigated this place with me about 10 years ago. And I think there's a really important lesson with this story. I've talked about the Myrtles Plantation. I've written about it. And a couple of weeks ago, I was contacted by a television producer who said, we would like you to come on the show and be a skeptic. Do you believe it? Be the skeptic on the show and talk about the Myrtles Plantation. We read your book, Haunting America, and we'd like you to share your investigation and research and your opinions. So I
That's Haunting America, HAUNTEAMERICA, Haunting America by Dr. Karen Stolzno.
And it is a very good read. So I'm not just saying that because she's my co-host and I'm not married to her, so I have no obligations.
That's so true. No obligation. But I think that the important lesson here is that you can come back to a story and there's always more to discover. There's always more to find out, more pieces to the puzzle, and that we just can't accept these stories. It's folklore, but as ghost stories, we can't accept them until we have really researched the history, and there's always more to find out. And that's been the case with this particular story. So I'm really excited to talk about it today. So Myrtles Plantation, and this, I'm sure most of our listeners will have heard of the place. It's very well known. And of course, it's said to be America's most haunted house in America, like all of the rest of them. But I think that this place truly does lay claim to this in terms of folklore anyway. Certainly, it was one of the first places to claim that this was the case.
Is it named the Myrtles because the flower? Or
yes,
something else.
The crepe myrtle.
Oh, it's the crepe myrtle. Okay, so it's named for the crepe.
Grow there.
Okay.
But it was originally had a different name. So we'll get into a little bit of the history. And the Myrtles Plantation originally started with General David Bradford. So he's better known as Whiskey Dave and famous for his association with the Whiskey Rebellion.
Ah.
So he, yeah, him. And so he had a bounty, of $500 on his head for participating in that rebellion. So he escaped Pennsylvania and he went to Bayou Sara, as it was known then, in Louisiana, where he built Laurel Grove. So this was in 1796. It wasn't known as Louisiana then, as a lot of our listeners will know as well. This was a Spanish-owned colony, and it was called the Republic of West Florida at the time. And so he traveled out there and built this. It was a comparatively small compared to the building as it exists today. So he received a pardon from then President John Adams for his role in the rebellion. So Whiskey Dave moved his family to the plantation now that he was he'd been pardoned. And so so many stories and so much folklore and urban legends connected to this place. And so today people believe that there are, you'll hear usually that there are 10 ghosts or 11, 12, 13, 14, even more than that. So much has happened there. But one of the main claims that you'll hear is that the plantation is built on Tunica burial ground. So therefore, this is the supposed cause of all of the hauntings. And I wanted Matt to kind of comment on that a bit because I think he's come across that kind of claim a lot over the years.
Well, that is the go-to claim. Anytime it's like, well, why is this place haunted? And they might look at you puzzled. Now, I'm talking about any place, not just the Myrtles. They might look at you puzzled and go, it's built on a Native American burial ground.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's haunted. Well, you mm-hmm. know, America is a Native American burial ground.
It sure is.
So, you know, I don't know how far that claim goes, but that is such a popular excuse for why something mm-hmm. might be haunted.
Agreed. I think we talked with Colin Dickey about that in when we had him on one of the first time, I guess. Idea that the way that these ghost stories often get tied to indigenous people or people who are oppressed or people who are, you know, low economic standing or low social standing.
Or in this case, just simply mystical.
Instead of treating people like real people, you treat them like magical creatures or something. It's a bad look.
It is indeed, and it comes into play heavily in this particular story. But as for the Tunica people, they did reside in that area, but it was about 30 miles north of the Myrtles plantation. So that's impossible that that was a burial ground of theirs anyway. So lots of busting the claims with this story here.
And boom, first claim busted.
So most people will have heard about the next resident of the household, and his name was Judge Clark Woodruff. And he moved into the plantation originally as a law student. So there were a series of families of people who practiced law who lived in the house. And so he actually married Whiskey Dave's daughter, Sarah.
Karen, I'm sorry to interrupt, but was he Whiskey Dave's law student?
I'm not entirely sure, but probably for him to marry his daughter. I think that that's the case.
Yeah, I had heard that as part of the legend, so I wasn't sure. Well,
it is very difficult to research this topic. And again, for everything that we'll be discussing tonight, there's so much more to find out. But I believe that that is the case. So they married and they had three children, James, Cordelia, and Mary. And this family, they're the key players in the main ghost story that's associated with the Myrtles. So, Blake, you haven't been there before. I'm sure you will. It's on your bucket list. You'll get there one day. But have you heard the story of Chloe?
Yes.
Very famous story. And sometimes she's known as Cleo as well, but usually she's known as Chloe. And so the narrative basically goes that she was an enslaved woman. She was a house slave. And she was having an affair with Judge Woodruff. And the first thing that kind of struck me is that during those times, people didn't have affairs within that kind of context. It's going to be a case, and we will have to insert a content.
There would be the big question of agency. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. So this was not something that she would have agreed to, but that's the claim. And some say that the relationship ended badly, he took another woman, and therefore she was concerned about the safety and security of her position in the household. She did not want to go and work the farm. Instead, she wanted to stay in the household, taking care of the children and cooking and cleaning. So she started eavesdropping on Judge Woodruff's personal business, and they say that she was caught snooping a number of times. And after about the third time, the judge was fed up, and as punishment, he sliced off her ear, her left ear. So terrible story, and it gets worse. So either as revenge for him doing that or to get back into his good books, Chloe bakes a cake for the family, and it's filled with the juice or the leaves, depending on the story, from the poisonous oleander plant. We used to have them growing around our house in Sydney. They were everywhere. As the story goes, the family ate the cake, but perhaps not the judge. Some say that he was on business. He wasn't there at the time. And very sadly, the cake killed Sarah and two of the children. Usually they say the two girls both perished from eating the cake. So Chloe was, as they say, she was lynched by a mob as punishment, and her body was thrown to the alligators in the Mississippi. So this is what they'll tell you when you go to the Myrtles and do their ghost tours, which come free with a stay at the bed and breakfast.
Oh, do they? So, how's the food?
Southern.
They've got a restaurant there.
Yeah, you know, you're a vegetarian. I don't imagine that anything from Louisiana Southern style cooking is going to really.
I love red beans and rice and jambalaya. I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So the few nights that Matt and I went there, we had a fantastic trip, And we went to Baton Rouge. We didn't stay in St. Francisville. Matt, perhaps you'd like to give a quick anecdote about the local supermarket there.
Wow, yeah.
Since Blake has asked.
Yeah, it's funny, and I can't remember. Was this supermarket? I thought this supermarket was in St. Francisville, but I could be wrong.
It was.
Okay, good. Okay.
Yeah, we're walking to illustrate to Blake that the food there wasn't very good for me.
Right. But one of the great things about the grocery store is they do cater very much to mothers with newborn babies. So you've got the baby aisle. And I'll have to send you a photo because the baby aisle is 90% wine and 10% diapers.
And like diapers and anybody who's pacifiers. Not a parent would be like, oh, I don't know, that's it appears, but yep, that makes sense. What?
Yeah. Mama's little helper.
So yeah, I'll send that to you.
Mommy juice, as I've heard it called.
So that's the story. And, when I first wrote about this, I uncovered a fact, the truth behind that particular story, or part of it anyway. And so since then, I have heard this repeated a lot, which is great because I think it means that people are listening to what I've said. So there's no solid evidence that Sarah and her children died of oleander poisoning. So they did die, but they died of yellow fever because there was an outbreak of the disease at the time. In the parish, West Feliciana Parish.
Yeah.
So it seems like it wasn't the two little girls who died. It was the son, James, and Cornelia. However, Sarah died in 1823, while the two little ones didn't die until the following year in 1824. So there are records to attest to this. So it's very clear that they didn't die of poisoning. They died of yellow fever. And Mary went on to live a very long life until 1889, and the judge, he died in 1851. So that's the kind of truth behind that story. And moreover, when it comes to Chloe, there are lots of different Chloes. So there are different versions of the story, different names, Chloe or Cleo, different claims about the woman as well. So as we know, these are the hallmarks of an urban legend.
Yeah.
So when you've got these lots of different variations, then you can be pretty sure that it's an urban legend. So going back to sources that I've uncovered in the 1940s, she actually started out not as an enslaved woman, but as a little old French woman. Then she became a housemaid. Then she became a French Canadian nanny, an au pair girl. And later on, a voodoo priestess. So nowadays, she's an enslaved African-American woman. And I think that that's because that sounds the worst to modern ears, that was the kind of situation that had taken place there.
The most victimized, the most oppressed. And it fits into that, that narrative of like trying to fight back against power, but also isn't true.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or, say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose, it kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever, crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and WagOn.
We've got a podcast recommendation I think will be really fun and or useful for Monster Talk listeners. I Know Dino, the big dinosaur podcast.
Studying dinosaurs can teach us about the prehistoric world, but also the world of today. For example, migration patterns of dinosaur lineages can tell us about the Earth's changing continents.
Climate models of dinosaur ecosystems help us understand global warming.
Studying dinosaur diets can help show the link between plant and animal evolution.
Talk about paleo. In many dinosaur injuries, paleopathologies are the first known occurrences of diseases.
A new episode of I Know Dino comes out every week with new dinosaur discoveries you won't hear about anywhere else. You can find I Know Dino on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. She has been described as a young woman and also an old woman. She's been described as a beautiful, slim woman, and she's been described as a large, heavy-set woman. So there are lots of different descriptions of her clothing as well. Going back decades ago, it was said that she used to wear a green dress, and that has now morphed into her, well, then later on, it morphed into her wearing a green bonnet and then a green beret. And nowadays it's evolved into a green turban or a green scarf because that would fit in with that particular narrative to cover her missing ear. And also in line with, I guess, what people think that enslaved people would have worn in those days.
I can almost hear air supply in the background. Can you hear that? Because it's like she's every woman in the world to me, it seems like.
Well, she is. And there's more. In all the versions of the tale, she's not missing an ear. But nowadays she is missing an ear. And then there's one story too that says she did lose an ear, but it was before she'd moved to the Myrtles. It was due to frostbite in Canada.
Wow.
So, well, anyway, this is the clincher. This is the clincher here. The name didn't emerge until a psychic visited the Myrtles in the 1980s.
The 80s?
In the 80s, and claimed that she sensed a ghost named Chloe. So Chloe only goes back to the 1980s in that particular form.
Wow. So generic.
Zero evidence except for psychic ability.
Yeah.
Which has happened how many times with the case of Sarah Winchester and the Winchester Mystery House, the claims that she'd visited a psychic who told her to move from the East Coast to the West Coast.
And that psychic's name was Chloe. It's all coming together. No.
It was Adam Coombs, but it's, you know, it's always a psychic. I mean, in that particular case, the psychic didn't seem to exist, but in this case, the psychic has fabricated this character and this name. And
psychics do not fabricate.
Yeah. Never.
Yeah.
So there's no evidence for. I did some digging into the Louisiana slave database as well, and there's no evidence for an enslaved woman by these names in the parish and attached to this particular plantation. Now, I'd really like to do a lot more research into this particular area because, I mean, there's just so much to understand. But the place has a very long history. People say that it was originally a plantation for indigo and for cotton. But I do see a lot of evidence that these were lawyers who lived on the premises over the decades. And I'm really not sure for how long it was a plantation. You know, you've got a lot going on in history as well with the Civil War, lots of things happening around that time. So, but I should really get into that because it's really going down a rabbit hole and it's diverting from the story. But I think that there's a lot of information there to suggest that Chloe, in the form that she is discussed today, that she didn't exist. And I, just on a whim, I thought, you know, I wonder if the oleander plant exists in Louisiana. So I did some digging and discovered that it's actually not native to the United States. And it wasn't introduced into the country until 1841. Now, these claims go back to the 1820s.
Yeah.
So the plant wasn't even in the country until 1841.
So you're saying Chloe was framed? No.
Yes. you listen to everything I just said. So for the nerds out there.
That's awesome. I mean, everything breaks down under scrutiny.
Yeah. And that's absolutely, absolutely. So it wasn't planted in the country until 1841. It was first planted in Galveston in Texas. And it's not even found in West Feliciana Parish. And the funny thing is you go there and they've got some oleander in a little vase on display, which keeping up the story.
Yeah. Leaning so, into it. Yeah.
Now, when Matt and I went there, Matt, if you just want to tell this part of the story about the diary?
Oh, well, that was one of the things they said, is that Judge Woodruff's diary stated that, you know, Chloe was a very pretty mixed race woman, very small and petite. And he kind of detailed the affair he had with Chloe. Now, we were told on the tour that this diary is kept under a lock and key in the local library, the West Feliciana Parish.
Oh, it's like a special collections.
Yes. Yes. So it's like, yeah, you know, if you, it's there with most of the, like the Fabio romance books. but when we went there and asked to see it, they said that doesn't exist. That's not a true thing at all. But we do have a political treatise that he wrote. And that one is stored in the local library. It's a political treatise, not a diary.
He was wanting to run for politics. And so it's not a diary. It's really a compilation of arguments and including some arguments from his opponents too. But it's not personal. It's not about an affair or his love life or anything like that. So we found that they did a lot of that. We'll be talking about, I guess this is a good point really to move on to another topic. In closing, when it comes to Clark Woodruff, he was a real person, and it just seems to me as though he's being maligned by these stories. They have a portrait of him there, and you know, people boo and hiss and spit at him, and it's really slander because he never married again. I'm not entirely sure what the situation was with enslavement at that point. And again, that's going down a rabbit hole, but there's no evidence that this happened. It seems as though he was deeply in love with his wife and very affected by her passing, never married again, and ended up moving to New Orleans and starting life again with his daughter after a while. So, yeah, basically I'm tracing the ghost stories to the 1920s. They could go back earlier, and they're certainly told now and retold as local legends. But it just, Matt and I were talking about this earlier today, that this is a case of history really being erased by these ghost stories.
Yeah. I mean, even at the plantation itself, I was looking at their website. It's a really beautiful website. It's a beautiful house and site. But it says, like, when you come to the entrance, it says the Myrtles, home of mystery and intrigue. Well, that's a... It's a bit thick.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's...
It's the home of not getting a good night's sleep.
Because of
ghost hunters. We'll get to that soon.
Sorry.
So we're talking about West Feliciana Parish. They have a historical society and also a library. So when we went there, we not only asked about this supposed diary, but we also asked about a very famous photograph. So, Blake, if you're familiar with the story of Chloe, are you familiar with the story of her photograph?
Is this the one where she's upstairs in the either in a window or on the roof or something?
No.
Well, yeah, close, and Matt will talk about those photographs.
But, okay.
So this one is said to be proof that she existed. And so I believe the story is the current owner, Tita Moss, was taking a photograph for insurance purposes of the house. And to document the house. And she submitted that photograph. And they said, look, you can't use this photograph because there's a person in the photograph. You have to take this photograph again. And she said, there's not a person here. And she examined the photograph and spotted Chloe. Chloe's
boat. Oh, it's okay. I'm looking at it now. Yes, yes. I've seen this. Yeah. I don't know why I had her upstairs in my head, but
Well, yeah, as I said, Matt will get into that because there are ghosts upstairs as well. There are ghosts everywhere. And so when we went on the tour, we were told, and it depends on what tour you go on and who's giving the tour or what year it is, but they will tell you that either the FBI or MIT or National Geographic or some other organization has performed a shadow density analysis test to ensure that
cool.
The photograph, it does, it sounds totally convincing, just to prove that the photograph hasn't been tampered with or faked or enhanced. Now, Matt doesn't believe that this particular test exists in this way for this kind of purpose.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to me as someone who does photo analysis myself. The density of a shadow in a photo, you know, you can't tell if they've, you know, turned up the contrast or, you know, anything else by doing a shadow density test. I mean, it doesn't really ring
but
true to me.
Why would the FBI do that?
Yeah, and what would it tell you? What would it tell you if, ooh, this shadow is more dense? It doesn't, yeah, it doesn't really tell you anything.
It's measured in ghost parts per million, and I think that's the relevancy.
There you go.
Yeah. I didn't think about the GPM part of it. That changes everything for me. The photograph that you looked at, let me guess, it was black and white, correct?
With a red circle. Like, yep.
With a red circle. The red circle is very important because you wouldn't know what to look at otherwise.
No, exactly, right, yeah.
So the thing is the original photo's in color.
Oh,
and it's very high quality. Yeah, it's very high quality because it had to be sent to the insurance company, supposedly.
Okay.
I've never heard of an insurance company saying you can't have any humans in this picture. I mean, maybe they do. I'm not an insurance guy.
Yeah.
So I completely don't know, but I've never heard of it.
What was the claim about? Like, why was there an insurance claim?
Well, there wasn't a claim. It was they had just purchased the place and they were trying to get insurance.
Okay.
So they had to send photos and everything. And, oh, there's a human being in this photo. That's neither here nor there. But the thing is, where is the original photo? Because they have
the
original
library.
Photo.
That's what they tell you.
And they also say that it could be in a safe that the owners have, you know, under lock and key kind of thing.
I've heard them say both.
What's that?
You know what I've heard as well? They tell people that they will show you the photograph on the tour, which is not true.
That is not true.
Is it possible that they're not saying library? They're saying library, which is where you bury your lies.
Well, it is the South.
Exactly. So I'm from Georgia.
I couldn't make that joke, but you could.
There are some lies buried here.
Yeah.
If you could address the image and the quality of it.
Yeah. And I really want to, because now if you go there, not when we went there, some 10 years ago, that they were selling this photo as a postcard.
Oh.
I'm sure they still do, but
a ghost card?
Yes. Okay. I'm sorry you didn't understand my accent. Totally. The thing is the photo has been exported, or however you want to say it. It's been basically turned into a duotone, which is great for newspapers and things like that, or black and white printing. So the only two colors are black and white, and there is no gray. It mm-hmm. depends on how big the black dots are in certain mm-hmm. areas compared to the white dots that give you an impression of gray. Mm-hmm. But there's an incredible loss of data, an incredible loss of information when you strip a photo of not only the color, but its clarity by turning it into a duotone. Mm-hmm. So, and it's like they often call a duotone kind of a checkerboard, you know, kind of look. So if you mm-hmm. zoom in on a newspaper, you'll see exactly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, it is a series of little black and white, like little squares or dots, mm-hmm. depending. So that really, really did wipe out the quality. And it's interesting that it is the only photo that they show of it. Is this really, really bad quality one when they claim they have the high quality one right there ready for everyone to look at?
Well, like blurry Bigfoot photographs.
Yeah.
Same kind of genre.
Well, but let's be honest. I mean, let's be honest. If it were a perfectly clear photo, we would still be skeptical that it was a ghost.
Well, we would. And I guess that's where we'll go into what is it? If it's not a ghost, if it's not Chloe. What is it? So we've had a number of different theories that it could be a shadow, it could be a real person. So Matt, again, if you'd like to explain what we did while we were there.
Yeah. I mean, my favorite theory is someone was standing there.
At the time.
So what we did is got our camera set up in the same position and took a picture with Karen standing there.
I was Chloe.
Yep, she was Chloe, and I'll be darned if it didn't look very similar. But when you look closely at the really crappy photo that they put out, it seems like you can almost see through.
Yes.
Chloe.
Yeah, she seems translucent, if that's really a
seems. Person. Yes.
Well, and it seems to, like, she's a little shorter than me, so maybe, and they actually tell you as well that she's about 4 to 5 feet tall, and I guess people were a little shorter in those days.
Yeah. So, okay, this is reasonable.
So here we are, I guess, 10 years later, and Matt and I are scouring YouTube for videos of the premises to see what we can see around that area. And Matt, kudos to him, spotted something.
As this one gentleman is a tourist, he's walking around the building, and he walks by one of those old sort of a clothing presses. You know how
laundry rollers.
And I'm looking at it and going, you know, part of that looks like Chloe. You know, if that were sitting in between the two buildings. Mm-hmm. And you only saw part of it. Those rollers would kind of line up with where the paneling is, you know, the wood paneling on the side of the building. Mm-hmm. Because if you look closely, the sort of the black lines that separate the panels, they line up through Chloe, but they're a different thickness.
Mm-hmm.
And for the kind of the ornate top of this this laundry press or roller, it has this, you know, kind of ornate top that looks a little bit like it could be a turban in that position. And Chloe's arm suspiciously doesn't look like an arm, but it looks like something flat and solid, like a board, a shelf type
something
thing,
mechanical.
Mechanical. But it's not, you know, the sort of smoother lines of a human.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at it,
and with the height as
less,
well,
yeah, the height
doing
and everything.
Some
it fits.
Research, they state that Chloe's 4 to 5 feet, and in looking at these laundry rollers, they were about 4 to 5 feet tall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had it right there. We're going to see if we can find the one and get photos.
Oh, cool.
Clearly, it's something that they've had on the property for some time. But I think that in terms of a skeptical explanation, is by far the best explanation I've ever come across for what Chloe is.
I look forward to seeing how closely that lines up. Anyway, that sounds really cool, though. And yeah, if the shape of it matches, that makes sense.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard part one of our two-part coverage of the Myrtles Plantation, allegedly one of the most haunted places in America. Tune in next week to find out a lot more about the truth behind these mini legends. You can enjoy extended commercial-free versions of this show by joining us at patreon.com/monstertalk, all one word, MONSTERTALK. For as little as $2 a month, you can enjoy longer interviews, unbleeped language, and bonus episodes exclusive for patrons. And if $2 a month is not workable for you, but you still want to help out, be sure and leave us a positive review on your podcasting platform of choice. iTunes reviews in particular can help bring in new listeners, and your positive reviews really make a difference. If you want to learn other ways to help out, visit monstertalk.org/support. Where you can find even more ways to help keep this show going. Thank you to all of you who are supporting us with your hard-earned money and valuable time. We are humbled and grateful and hope that we always live up to or even exceed your expectations. Monster Talk theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. Out of all the podcast joints and all the towns and all the world, you walked into ours, and we thank you.
This has been a Monster House presentation.